makes it a whole lot easier when he gets the ground ready, doesn't it? It's hard to plant seed in the dirt that hadn't been prepared. It makes our job a lot easier, doesn't it? Let's open up to Luke chapter 10. While you're turning there, this, not to be repetitive, but how many agree that we're witnessing a shift in history? We're witnessing a change in the society that we live in. This world we live in is it's amazing to see at the speed at what things are accelerating. And I mean, the things that's happening, the division in this world is just, I mean, it blows my mind. And I could sit here and ramble for 3 hours on the things that just eat at your core when you try to make sense of everything. And I don't know if I've really ever had this happen before, but two of the songs that we played, of course, we don't correspond anything, you know, when set lists are made, but touched on exactly what I wanted to minister on this morning. The first one we sang was Lay 'Em On Down. And when you think about the message behind that song, laying our burdens down at His feet. And then we sang about the song Loyal. And you think about the loyalty of our Father's love. And Mark, you just used the term next level. And I think anybody that's halfway awake would probably agree that there's definitely something changing. And to get to that next level, though, there's still a little bit of rocky soil that we've got to cross. And I struggled for weeks to even have a text to preach from. And I shared that with a few people, and I've never had that happen before. And this morning at 9:50, I was sitting in the room back there just going over my notes. I had some scriptures, but I just didn't have the one that fit. And I flipped open to Luke 10. In light of everything that's been going on in our world the last several months, if y'all will allow me, will you let me speak into your heart? I had two words confirmed this morning from people in here. Go ahead and just start stomping. Because everybody that gets stomped on is us included. Mark, you lead with that example from your mew on up. Don't ever take a message from this pulpit and think that it's aimed at you without looking in the mirror first, the person up here speaking. So we're going to stomp a little bit, and then we're going to encourage a little bit, and we're going to move on to that next level. Verse 38 of chapter 10, it says this, "Now it happened as they went that he entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. She had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Yeshua's feet and heard his word. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she approached him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me.' And Yeshua answered and said to her," and I just kind of picture his voice, and the tone of his voice was probably really soft when he said this, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things. But the one thing that's needed," and it could easily say, "the one thing that's needed in your life, Mary has chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her." And I want to open up and let's talk about that good part for a minute in Psalms chapter 91, if you can turn there for me, please. And it says this, he who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. And I will say of Yahweh, he is my refuge and my fortress, my God, and in him I will trust. Very familiar passage of Scripture, would you say? And in light of what you just witnessed, Yeshua tell Martha that your sister is seeking that which is good. And when you back up a few verses, what was Mary doing? She was sitting at Master's feet. And when you look at Psalm 91 and it says, he who dwells, that word dwell means to sit down, to sit still, to tarry. What did Yeshua tell his disciples? To tarry in Jerusalem. He said, those who dwell, those who sit in the Master's presence, shall abide. And that also means just to stop, slow down, to tarry. And I thought that was interesting when I started looking at that, because that's something that's so hard in our lives to do, is just slow down. It's so hard for some people just to sit still spiritually. And here you see Martha, probably an example of a lot of us, rush and rush, work and serve and work and serve, and so distracted. And then you see Mary sitting at the Master's feet. That's a prime example of situational awareness. Because we're all called to serve, right? Nothing wrong with that. But in the presence of our King, which one would you be? Would we have enough situational awareness to just be able to know that we can sit and rest and tarry in His presence? Does anybody else struggle with that? Just sitting still? Because we equate that with where we came from of a life of religion of doing nothing. That's not what it's talking about. There comes a time, sometimes we just need to sit and dwell in His presence. For the first time in our lifetimes, and probably several generations, our entire world was shut down before us. And we still struggle to be still. We live in a rat race society. Like a bunch of hamsters on a wheel. And to paraphrase, I shared this with Tammy the other day. I heard a little short snippet from Francis Chan, and I don't know if many of you know who he is, but he was a mega church pastor in California, and gave all of it up, and he's a pastor at a small congregation in Hong Kong now. And he was sharing his perspective of how they've been living there for a while, and their perspective of the people there. I didn't realize that the Hong Kong people were such goal-driven, rushing. And he described them like this, that they live their lives like they're on a treadmill. They're always rushing and always end up the same spot. And that'll probably click with most of us in 3 or 4 days. But we just had the opportunity of a lifetime to shut our minds down. We had the opportunity to live a Psalm 91:1 moment to where we were able to just sit down and rest and tarry in His presence. But it seems that people have a hard time doing it. For most, we want to receive the promises of verse 3 through 16, but we don't want to start in verse 1. We all want His promises, but we don't want to just rest and tarry in His presence. Our world is in utter chaos, and as a society, I'm just going to read off some of my thoughts that I wrote down, if that's okay. As a society and as a body, Why is our world so restless? I'll tell you one of the reasons, one of the main reasons, is there's too many voices in our ears. Paul addressed this same issue in Galatians. We see outside influences that came in and created division and diverted a congregation's loyalty. Loyalty, that's a trait that is quickly fading in our society. Pastor Mark asked a question last week. During this weird, unprecedented time that we've went through the last 3 months, what did you do with this time? He asked the question, did people turn their faces to their Bibles? I'll tell you what I saw. I saw a lot of people that turned on each other. In the body of Messiah, I saw a lot of people that jumped straight into a spirit of criticism across this nation against government leaders, against spiritual leaders, and all at once, everybody became an expert. I've seen a lot of recliner captains saying what they would do if they were the president. Now, you know I'm not pointing the finger just at you, right? I'm saying in general. Just let me speak for a minute because I feel some pushing. A lot of recliner captains saying what they would do if they were the president. But let me ask you this, because I asked myself the same question. What if you had the weight of this nation's health and well-being on your shoulders? It's a whole lot different. Anybody in here in supervision of any kind at work? Okay? Is it different on that side, that position, than it was when you were a craft hand? Okay? It's easy when we stand around the water coolers. Tyler, you know that's a slogan that we use in the corporate world. There's a lot of water cooler talk that happens. A lot of griping and complaining, a lot of questioning, a lot of undermining management's decisions. Some of them from the water cooler don't make sense. But is it different when you get on that side and you start seeing the pressures of budget costs, time restraints, all the things that comes with that position, and then you hear the water cooler talk and it hits you a little different, doesn't it? Okay? Y'all tracking with me? What I seen was a large part of the body of Messiah today is no different when you get down to the base level. We're exactly like Israel was in the wilderness. Churches are no longer a family like it was in Acts. Congregations have become a place to where people who agree on doctrine meet. Did you hear that? It's no longer a family. Because what's inside of families most of the time? There's loyalty. Even through bad times, families work through them, right? Okay? But when you see how congregations respond to things, you realize that that's not the core of what it is anymore. It has drifted into a place to where a church is simply a place I go if I agree on the doctrine. Okay? It's evident that it's not centered around the kingdom anymore. And the evidence of that is because the minute that we don't like something or disagree with a decision, it's easy for people just to leave to go find what they want. Our society and congregations around the world included revolve so much around opinions instead of relationships. I challenge you to go outside and go talk to some pastors that you know, if you know any. Anybody ever heard of pastor burnout? You ever experienced it? Okay. You know, when I started researching what causes that most of the time, go out and talk to some of these pastors and ask them what causes it. Do you know it's not studying and preaching? Because most of the time, if people feel called to be a pastor or any type of leader, they generally have a love and a passion for the Word of God, right? Or you would hope so, okay? So that's not what burns them out. The number one consensus is people. People. One pastor said it's the constant nagging and badgering that we take from our members. One pastor said everybody is a critic. And you know something that I believe and I've witnessed throughout my life, that because I've been this person too at times, that the biggest critics usually don't bear any responsibility for the decision. It's easy, like I said, to judge the president because it's easy to say what we would do, because we can say that from a spot to where if it goes bad, there's no responsibility on you. It's just your opinion. One of the things that Yeshua and the apostles warned numerous times about, and it's one of Satan's greatest tactics, is division. Distract and divide. And he uses people to do it. He uses opinions to do it. A lot of people are shocked and alarmed with how society responded to this pandemic. And I have to admit, I've had mixed emotions about a lot of things. Okay? But one of the things that alarmed me more than that, like I say in general, and maybe I just need to just get off of social media, but I also encounter people that I hear talking about it too. The biggest thing that alarms me is it really exposed just how divided the body of Messiah really is. It's easy to talk about common beliefs and all that, but how do you respond when an opinion is different than yours? I'm alarmed by just how fast that so-called brothers and sisters in Messiah, I've heard stories of people, and I've read some articles and comments of how close friends don't even talk anymore over a virus. Please don't let that happen here. I mean, come on, y'all. It's a virus. One thing that's evident that's lacking in the body is wisdom. Wisdom. I've witnessed some posts of people that I know, they're not here, slamming their pastors publicly. Praising them a month or 2 months ago before all this happened about the greatest message he ever preached, and now slamming his character on Facebook and why? It's disgraceful. That's what it is. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, whether you believe that this thing was the worst plague to hit this world since the death angel in Egypt, or if you're on the side of the aisle that thinks this was the biggest hoax that's ever been pulled on mankind, I don't care. Somewhere in the middle, there's a balance. And you can't, I mean, it's alarming at the speed that people's loyalty can turn on each other over a difference of opinion. I work with people that thinks it's fake. And if you think it's fake, that's fine. I respect you for that. I'm not going to trash talk you and dog talk you and talk about how stupid you are for falling for this. At the same time, I believe it was real. Do I think it was heavily publicized? Yeah. Political? Yes. Dangerous? Yes. But at a time when we need to be praying for our leaders, our president, the government leaders, and our pastors for wisdom and encouraging, people are chastising and bickering. Put yourself in the shoes of somebody having to make a decision. If it goes bad and it's on you, how would you respond? You don't know until you're the one having to make the decision and the burden does fall on you. Are we hanging in? When you look at the chaos worldwide, from the secular world, which incorporates the body of Messiah too, I'm sorry, but it does. When you see the level of chaos, try to sit down and watch the news for 5 minutes and make sense of anything you just heard. Get on Twitter and try to read through news articles and look at the comments and the tweets and the retweets. You know why I think one of the reasons we've got so much chaos in this world, other than sin, is that's what happens when you give everybody a platform and a voice. You get chaos. When you look at any society that's ever been prosperous, there's order. When you look at the kingdom that Yahweh established for His people, it's a kingdom of order. It doesn't mean that your voice is not important. It just means that you don't get a platform just because you've got a voice. And you see the ramifications of when you give everybody a voice, trying to make a name for themselves, you've got utter chaos. And I don't think it's meant to be that way. I really think that some people forget that it's legal to be quiet. Struggled with that one a long time, but I promise you I've learned in the last couple months. I've typed out some paragraphs on some of these articles and have to delete it because I want to keep my job, keep my family safe. I struggle with it sometimes, I'm telling you. But it's still legal sometimes just to be quiet. Like Mark said, I'm going to meddle for a second. I'm convinced that some people, this thing turned into a book. Grief. That some people think their opinion is so important that if they don't voice it immediately, that the world may actually spin off its axis. But that's just my opinion. Somebody somewhere in the world needs to hear this. It's time we get off Facebook. And to be cliche, it's time to get in God's book. It's time for people to find a community that they can fellowship with, sit on front porches, talk about gardens, sit in living rooms and dialogue. That's the problem in our world. We don't do that anymore. We rat race, we rush and rush and rush. Sound like an Alabama song. And we never get anywhere. I got to spend time in people's living rooms through this past 3 months that I hadn't got to sit in for a long time. We've got to have some dialogues with people. You know what? Differences of opinion are not unhealthy. Okay? We had a good dialogue last week between three of us with six opinions. Five of them was mine. But you know what? We had a good discussion. Dialogue. Absolutely, that's the way it should be. People are afraid of it. There's not enough communities. And it's something people are hungry for. Because, you know what? Sitting on that riverbank, Don, that's how relationships are built, right? Sitting and talking with each other. Some people shouldn't have a voice. Yeah. I've never seen so much scripture taken out of context in my life, except through this. I hope to look back in 30 years and be able to laugh at this. But let me tell you something. I've seen so many people boasting about it's time to be a Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego in a world full of Nebuchadnezzars. It's time to be a Daniel in a world full of Nebuchadnezzars. And they use all these examples in the scriptures. I just want to say, you know what? You can't act like Korah and call yourself a Daniel. Do I got to repeat that one? You can't act like Korah and call yourself a Daniel. Daniel was loyal even to a wicked king. The context of Daniel and all is about bowing to idols. Okay? You can't act like Korah and call yourself a Daniel. We need to truly, and I think this is another weakness in the body, is we don't really know how to rightly divide His Word. Let's look at some scriptures, and let's try to divide it together. Let's turn to 1 Kings 17. I know, like I said earlier, it's been a very weird and confusing time for us. And I'm sure this time of isolation was probably really hard on some people. And I want to stand up here and tell you this, because I think you need to hear it from somebody other than your pastor. The decision to shut our services down was hard. And if I didn't have the help bear the weight of your help, I'd probably easily could question the wisdom behind doing it. But like I said, when things weigh on you and you bear responsibility for decisions that hit you in a different spot in your heart. I just want to touch lightly on this and we're going to move on. For those that may have been concerned about corporate gatherings, because I've seen more pastors take beatings over this than probably anything else any decision that was made during this time, a lot of heat on pastors for shutting corporate gatherings down. I don't know if it was a misunderstanding that thinking that the government mandated it, or I don't really know what the core of it is, but there was a lot of bashing went on. And the question I've seen more than once during those 7 weeks was it sinful to do it? You can breathe. And I want to show you something, because I searched hard through the scriptures for this. And it was more obvious than what I realized. There are times in the Bible that Yahweh had righteous men isolate themselves. During a time they could have been in corporate gatherings, He had them isolate. And I really hope to be an encouragement this morning. I don't want to be a toast humper. I don't want people getting the idea that I think I've got my stuff together, because I don't. But I want to look at some things, and let's try to get through this. 1 Kings 17, 1 through 5, I'm going to read that real quick. And it says, "And Elijah the Tishbite of the inhabitants of Gilead said to Ahab, 'As Yahweh the God of Israel lives, before whom I stand, there shall not be dew or rain these years, except at my word.' When the word of Yahweh came to him saying, 'Get away from here and turn eastward and hide by the brook Cherith, which flows into the Jordan. And it will be that you shall drink from the brook that I have commanded the raven, and I have commanded the ravens to feed you there.' So he went and did according to the word of Yahweh, and he went and stayed by the brook." First of all, I want to mention something. This wasn't a small thing. Elijah just pops on the scene suddenly. And this was not a small thing for him to have to do, to go stand before this king and tell him that without his word, Elijah's word, that he wasn't going to have rain on his kingdom until he says. Okay? Do you realize that was a direct attack? When you go back up and you read from 29 through 34, you see that Ahab married Jezebel, and She was an avid worshiper of Baal. When he told them, I'm not going to allow rain until I say so. Now, we know he was speaking for Yahweh, but Yahweh gave him that authority that at his word he would send rain. That was a direct attack against Ahab and Jezebel's God. Because Baal was the god of rain, fertility, and the god of crops. Without rain, you have no crops. So could you imagine the guts that it took to stand before him and tell him that I've got more power than your God does? Okay? Think about that courage. And then Yahweh has him flee to hide. What does that mean? Where is Elijah at? He's in isolation. Do you think there was probably still tabernacle services going on? Yeah. He was in isolation. Yahweh sent him into isolation. Are y'all tracking with me? Cherith was a place of isolation. He was put in a place where he had no choice but to be still and tarry. Yahweh set it up to where ravens would feed him. He had water to drink, and he stayed there and hid. Like I said at the beginning, our problem is we don't know how to slow down. Everybody wants a Mount Carmel moment. If you're not familiar with that story, that's where Elijah gets up there and whoops the fire out of 450 prophets of Baal. Yahweh sends fire down and burn. You know the story, okay? Wonderful spiritual pinnacle. Everybody wants that. Whatever your carnal moment is, everybody wants that. Can I say it this way? That's the next level. Do we want to go there? But are we willing to go to Cherith first? A place of isolation. Amen. Nobody, Yahweh wanted him there first. Why? When you read verse 7, chapter 17. And it says it happened after a while. We don't know how long. We know the drought lasted 3.5 years, but we don't know how long Elijah was at the brook. It happened that the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of Yahweh came to him saying, arise and go. Obviously, because I think that it may have scared some people when I said it's okay to isolate. Give me a few minutes. About 5 more pages and we're going to get there. Obviously, Yahweh doesn't want to stay in there. That's the thing. Yahweh had him there for a reason. A season of reflection. How many know that when we get alone with the Father, that's when he can grow our relationship with him? It's hard to grow with all the noise. It's hard to grow with all the voices. Could you imagine if Elijah went back to Tishbe or wherever he lived and had to sit in that village and knowing that the reputation that all you got to do is say the word and it'll rain. Could you imagine the voices? Could he have carried out the mission that Yahweh had for him? If he was in the midst of all the voices. So he had to send him into isolation to build a relationship with him. To a time of reflection. It's in a place of being still that we can be real with ourselves. And that's when Yahweh can expose to us our weaknesses. And that may be why we're scared of it. I always try to learn something from any situation that we face. some of the things I want to share, some things with that I've learned during this time till we didn't have a choice, you know, other than go to work and pretty much go home. I realized that how much I took community for granted. I can honestly say that after having that took away, that I have a greater appreciation for all of you today. Being able to slow down from the rat race of life, it was an instilling of a desire to grow food out of all things. For me, I could care less about it 6 months ago. Kids got to help us plant and take care of a garden. I realized that I had way too much confidence in the operations of our society, the economic system that you assume will always be available. And in something as stupid as toilet paper, you laugh, but when you can't buy it, and I'm going to tell you, as a husband and a father, that's a scary moment. No, because tomorrow it might not be toilet paper. We've always been able to run down to the store and just grab a buggy full of food. I wanted a steak and couldn't even find a steak at the grocery store. False security. I realized that. At the snap of a finger, I seen how real that He is. At literally the snap of a finger, He can crumble our world as we know it and leave us in the shambles, scattered like we were at Babel, not knowing which way to go. Elijah's biggest breakthrough was born in his isolation. Let's turn to chapter 19, after Carmel. He had the courage to stand up to the king and tell him that he was going to have more power than their gods, gets on a mountain with their prophets, and follows through with more courage, kills 450 of them. Can you imagine what kind of I hate to say spiritual high because you're thinking about blood and all that stuff, but could you think about the spiritual victory? Because there may have been a moment to where that fire wasn't coming down, that there may have been a little doubt, okay, you got to show up. Because he had to pray and intercede, seven times to get the rain to start? Because, you know, Yahweh, you told me all I had to do is say the word. And he had to pray seven different times before Yahweh done what he said he was going to do and sent rain. Seeds of doubt can sprout in there easily at those times. But through that, he got his biggest breakthrough. And let's look at 19 verse 6. Starting in verse 7, here we see again, the angel of Yahweh came back a second time and touched him and told him, arise and eat because the journey's too great for you. He sends him back into isolation again. And then in verse 12, we know the story where he's in the cave and Yahweh sends him to the entrance of the cave and there's a whirlwind, an earthquake, whatever else. And look what verse 12 says. And it was after the earthquake of fire. And after the earthquake of fire came. But Yahweh was not in the fire. Then after the fire, a what? A still, small voice. And so it was when he heard it, he wrapped his face. Could he have heard that voice with all the noise in Tishbe? I hope he lived in Tishbe. I don't know what Tishbe sounds good. Think about that. No lights, no cameras, no music, no dancing, nothing. Just him and the Creator. Is it sinful to be in isolation sometimes? Not if Yahweh ordered it. Countless times we see Yeshua withdraw to a quiet place to pray. Many, I didn't realize how many it was. I started looking at it this morning. Many times he withdrew to a quiet place to pray. Why? To get away from the noise. Yeshua was isolated for 40 days in the wilderness. Didn't gather. Yahweh put him in the wilderness. Is gathering important? Absolutely. And we're going to get there. But Yahweh sent him to the wilderness. Why? To test and get away from the noise. And Luke says it like this, and when he came out in the power of the Spirit. He came out at another level, out of isolation. He allowed the Father to work. Elijah allowed the Father to work what was intended to take root in his life. Sometimes Yahweh uses isolation as a season for us to grow. Moses spent 40 years on the backside of the desert. Joseph was in prison. Paul spent anywhere from 11 to 13 years in the desert, isolated from the noise. Like I said earlier, it's obvious that we're not meant to stay in isolation, because there's a mindset out there that ran rampant for probably years and probably still is, that we don't have to have community. But we're meant to produce fruit. Fruit is a type of reproduction, would you say? Okay? Yahweh said it's not good for Adam to be alone. And when you look at that and you study it in the Hebrew, it also can mean all one. It's not good for Adam to be all one, because we're not designed to procreate alone. Okay? We can't produce fruit by ourselves. Can you have a relationship with Yahweh outside of community? Yes, you can. And I think every leader here will tell you, you can have a relationship with Yahweh outside of the four walls of a church. But we're designed to dwell together. That's how we're designed. Don't ask me why. Ask Yahweh. He designed us because what brings him great joy, the psalmist says, that when brothers dwell together in unity. Okay, you can't dwell together if you dwell apart. If you live and you're on your own, it's just me and Jesus, how are you going to live in unity with your brothers? We're designed to be together, okay? When you look at let's turn to Galatians 5. We're winding down. When you look at the fruits of the Spirit, when you look at every one of them, every one of them takes human interaction. It's hard to show love to somebody by yourself. It's hard to be patient with somebody if there's nobody to be patient with. Gentle. It's every one of the fruits that we're to bear of the Spirit takes human interaction. Can we agree with that? Okay. Galatians 5:13. Through 15, for you, brethren, have been called to liberty. Only do not use your liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For all the Torah is fulfilled in one word, even in this, that you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. Through love serve one another, Paul says. Do you realize that when we serve one another with love, that it leaves very little room for disloyalty and division? Okay? Two things that we see running rampant in our world. And if we're not to be like the world, if we're operating in disloyalty and division amongst ourselves, how are we going to be a light to the nation? Because it's way more than showing up in a parking lot on a Saturday. Devouring. If you show me somebody that's constantly critical, and always devouring other people's character, I'll show you somebody that probably most of the time is self-serving and rarely lifts a finger to help others. Every one of the fruits of the Spirit shows us how Yeshua would treat us if he was in our midst. So if the fruit of having him and his Spirit within us means that we take on his character, right? He wants his people to move on to maturity and to bear fruit. When you look at the purpose of the Torah and the Spirit, they're both given to produce life and to produce good fruit. It's hard to produce any fruit for the kingdom on an island by ourselves. And when you look at how our world was suddenly stopped in its tracks, for the first time, maybe since Noah, that our entire society was put on the brakes. And then all you see from secular, Christian, whatever, is how divided our world truly is because we worry so much about our opinions about things that we can't control. Yahweh may have used this time for us, and I want you to consider this as a chance to tighten up a little bit. Because we can't move forward if we complain every single time the waters are bitter. Because at that time, that may be exactly what we need. I know for me, I need it this time. Because I missed more services in that 3 months than probably did my whole life. I needed the time to be able to appreciate what we have. Sometimes instead of being so dogmatic either way, when you read what Gamaliel told the people in Acts when they were fussing about the disciples and all, a lot of wisdom in the statement he made. Lots of wisdom. If it's from men, it'll fade. You've got nothing to worry about. But if this thing we've went through and still continuing to go through somewhat is from Yahweh, you're striking against him. That's a serious statement. And Gamaliel understood that because there's times Yahweh sends things to wake us up. Because if one complacent soul was awakened through this time, there's a lot of people professing faith right now because they realize that everything they thought they hoped for in this life could be crumbled. People are looking for hope. They're striving for something different in their lives. This virus triggered a lot of that. If you don't agree with me, that's fine. But if you think about it from the middle, if it was from Yahweh, you've got a lot to lose by being critical about how people respond, how people react. Can we break the pattern of the wilderness? Do we have it in us as a body to actually walk through a trial without all the bickering and complaining? The attacks against leadership, can we do it? I think we can. And I believe that's where Yahweh's calling us to next, Mark. At some point, we have got to stop being the 10 and start being the 2. They all seem the same giants. They all seem the same threat. 2 chose to look past them. 2 focused on the promises. 2 focused on the purpose that Yahweh had. Do you think that they may have had some fear? Absolutely. But they focused past the problem and they tried to keep unity because they knew what was a... They were 11 days from their breakthrough. And because they griped and complained, they wandered for 40 years Don't tell me that these guys didn't have some sense of wisdom in them and Yahweh unctioning them to encourage the people not to be fearful. Use wisdom, but look past the giants. Because you know what? Yahweh may have had the giants there for a reason. Let's help each other. If we've got differences, let's sit down and talk about it. And let's dialogue about it. Because I'm telling you, that's not done enough anymore. That was some of the things, Terry, that you know, that made some of our founding fathers so great, was they were men of dialogue. A lot of differences of opinions. Today, they would have never signed, we've never got the Constitution signed if it was in Washington today. But I think Yahweh's calling us to be different when it comes to that aspect. Let's pray that we all bear fruits, good fruit for the Spirit. Respect our differences, because we're all in this thing together.